5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Hello, welcome once again to another Tech Talk, and this week we are back with our guests who joined us last week on the show, and that is Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet. Hello, Robin!
Hello, glad to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back. And also David Woodbridge is back with us again from Vision Australia. Hello!
Hello.
Ooh, that was very English of you. Hello. Okay, well, look, let's get into it, because last week we talked about the past decade, and I don't know how many points on that show last week we said, we mustn't talk about this week because we'll be talking about it next week. So I hope somebody kept a list of all the things we were going to discuss. But there are so much technology that we can look forward to, and it might seem strange. David put together a list for us of his thoughts on this, and I was just reading through it before we came on, and I'm thinking, there's so much stuff coming that we are just not, we kind of know about because we've talked about it, but we'll, by the end of this decade, we will definitely see in action on our streets, on our roads, in our homes, whatever it may well be. So I want to get into some of that this hour and talk about the future and what the next decade will bring. I mean, we kick off 2020 with, I guess, the big news is going to be around driverless cars, isn't it? The push towards more autonomous vehicles. We're seeing ramped up trials. The chance that taxis will become automated probably first, which of course is great news for us as blind people. And that's the key point, that something like a car that we'd never have talked about in the last decade, we'd never have discussed cars, because cars were, you know, for other people. They just got us around. They got us to A to B. And, you know, inevitably you'd have to sit in one of them with another human being who generally was annoying, and you'd have to sit there and listen to them bleat on, and you just wish, I wish I could do this journey on my own. Well, it's this year and going forward, that might be the case, David. Fingers crossed.
I hate to say this, you sound like my Scottish grandmother.
She's got a deep voice.
Yeah, they don't make the way they used to.
No, they don't.
Self-driving cars, I think it's interesting, because at the moment we've still got the self-driving cars that do a certain route, and that's all they do. They don't do anything else. I've been talking to various people here in Australia too, and they reckon that self-driving cars are only about 10 years away. So it is going to be hopefully by the end of, you know, the decade. So I think it's going to be really interesting. But mind you, at the moment, if I knew that a blind person was sitting in a self-driving car on a freeway somewhere, I don't know if I want to be on the same freeway.
Well, they're not doing anything, though. The machine's doing all the work. The blind person, we're not doing anything in these vehicles.
I mean, that's us talking today in 2020. Mm. You know, like you say, by the end of the decade, I think people are going to feel very differently about it, because all the news stories will be about how accident rates have come down, you know, the price of being able to get from A to B in quotes private transport will have come down. It'll be a fraction of car ownership.
Traffic as well, no matter traffic on the road.
Traffic congestion will be better. Yeah. I think it'll be a really good news story. I'm conscious that we didn't mention this last week, and some people, I'm sure, will be thinking it was an omission, because, you know, the rise of driverless tech has been happening over many years, really, but only recently, and certainly it was in the last decade that we saw these trials, these pilots on actual city streets that you mentioned. And so arguably driverless tech is a thing today. Mm. It's not, you know, commonly or publicly available, but the tech is able to be trusted, I would argue, on certain routes that have been mapped really well. So arguably it has arrived today, but as you say, David, I think that it will be a huge theme going forward, and hopefully people will be comfortable with it. I mean, from my point of view, A, you won't know whether it's a blind person or not in the car.
No.
The car could be empty, could be going to pick up its next ride. Yeah. It could have a child in it going to school. For Stephen, I hope that there are one single pod cars so that you don't ever have to share it with anybody else.
That's the one
they'll
I want.
They'll be all shapes and sizes, and they'll be just doing their thing. And we'll be so familiar with looking at them, you know, effortlessly weaving and out, probably grazing each other's bumpers almost within a millimeter because they're so good at avoiding each other and yet using the road space efficiently, that we'll be really comfortable with them. That's my hope anyway.
Actually, it's interesting because I can imagine these not. I can imagine these vehicles not being owned by a person, but they're like a shared transport system. So, you, yep. I don't know, your voice recognition or whatever you do, you say, okay, well, I've got to go and get to work at blah blah blah. So the automated system of the car, whatever it is, turns up. You jump into it. It takes you to your place of employment or wherever else it might be, and then zooms off on its own job. Or if you're lucky enough to own one, it goes and parks its little self, its own little personal parking spot somewhere else, comes back, picks you up, and up it goes again. I must say though, I still want a kit. I want a you know, a Knight Industries 2000 Trans Am talking car. I could totally embrace the new self-driving cars if I got a kit.
I think the idea, and I wish Robin Spinks from RNIB was on this conversation with us, because I know he's got strong views on this, and his strongest view is that the idea of car ownership will just disappear. By the end of the decade, the idea of owning a vehicle might appear benign, and by the end of 2040, it'll probably be a completely alien idea to own a vehicle, because you just essentially use vehicles. You, I mean, Uber has kind of started this, and I can see how Uber is the beginnings of this approach. You know, you go into an app, you connect up, you connect to a driver, you know, you tell the car where it's going, you pay your money, and you get in and go. And you can almost understand why, with the technology that exists, and actually in some cases I don't think there'd be any difference between a driverless vehicle and an Uber. I mean, an Uber just turns up, it stops in front of you or at the meeting place you've agreed, you get in, the driver uses the sat nav to take you to the location. You know, he doesn't necessarily, or she doesn't know where the location is. It's just all based on sat nav. You know, the car is just going to be implementing the same, and arguably more safely, because the driver isn't looking at the sat nav all the time, you know, instead of looking
Absolutely.
At the road. So it's a much, and safety is the key point here. You know, so many drivers, and I get sick, and I want to say this right now, because I'm sick to death hearing about drivers moaning about, oh, we'll not be able to drive our cars anymore. I like driving. I like a drive to the pub on a Sunday. Oh, go away. I'm sick hearing about it.
You know, this isn't about you. One of Stephen's New Year's resolutions isn't to be less grumpy.
No, it's not.
In 2020.
I get so sick of it, because it's like, stop driving the conversation on this. This is going to be massive for blind people getting out and about. How many times, I don't know about you guys, right, but I like I like going to a place that's got golden arches in the shape of a letter M, right? I enjoy that place. And occasionally I'll get a chance to go there only because a taxi driver has kindly allowed me to go through the drive-through. Because, you know, I don't really like having the fast food in the car, and, you know, you might spill your drink and all this nonsense. Whereas, I can get my driverless car, I can go anytime I want. And anybody who drives can do that whenever they want with their car. And it's just, it's those little things in life, those little social things that enable you to do things, going to the store at night or going to a country pub on a Sunday. All those things that we'll be able to do as a result of these vehicles, and do it on our own.
I think that you you rightly ascribed that view to Robin Spinks, but actually all Robins have this strongly held opinion that car ownership will be a bizarre thing of the past. Or maybe people will own one of these cars, but actually it will be a mini business for them.
Yeah.
They'll send it off to work for them when they don't need it. But, you know, like a taxi fleet of one or whatever. But I just hope that all of these cars are going to be a bit like those bowling shoes where, you know, they spray in between each use. I hope that there's some sort of little robotic thing going on in there which gets rid of all the spilt Coke from the last person that went through the drive-thru.
How dare you call me grumpy and you say that? How dare you?
Shall we even say other less salubrious spillages or whatever? So, yeah, let's hope they at least kind of fumigate the cars in between journeys, so that because who knows what's going to be going on in those cars, kids with their sticky fingers and stuff. So yeah, but I'm really, really excited.
That's me. Actually, it's interesting because we've got our metro system now in Australia. we've got a light rail system that runs from point A to point B somewhere in Sydney that I've actually been on, and it's a driverless train. So the driverless train is controlled via a control system somewhere in the city, and there's no driver. You can look from one end of the train to the other. There's nobody there. It stops at the, you know, it stops at the terminal. It's got glass walls so you can't fall under the track. You get on, off you go. Everything's brailled, blah, blah, blah. The only problem is because there's nobody monitoring that system or there's no artificial intelligence, it was interesting in December, I think it was 2019, apparently a lady had pushed her pram onto the train, went to step on, the doors had closed on her, and the train went off with her baby in a pram, leaving her on the station. So I just think it's okay to have driverless systems and self-automated systems, but I just hope the artificial intelligence behind all this stuff is at a level that it can cope with different types of scenarios.
Well, I think that's the fear. Yeah, yeah.
And that's the point, actually, about all of this. And that's why, I guess, driverless vehicles themselves are in question so much. The conversation is often around what will a car do if it is faced with a situation where, you know, it's coming along a road, a child kicks a ball out onto the road, and the car has to decide whether it's safe to stop, whether it's safe to plow through the ball, or indeed plow through whatever else is in front of it on the pavement, or, you know, go off the side of a bridge, or whatever it has to do to save itself, or what it thinks it has to do. These cars have to make decisions, ethical decisions, and that's placing a lot on a vehicle. But of course, that's partly because when these vehicles turn up, you know, in their infancy, they will be alongside other car drivers. So, you know, we can't, if we could just switch it all overnight, it'd be a lot easier. You just, you know, get rid of all the drivers, say, right, that's it. No longer do you have that. All these cars are automated now. You know, give, you know, drop your keys in through a special letterbox and go away and, you know, get your app out and, you know, book your car tomorrow. That would be brilliant, but that's not the world we're going to live in. So it's going to take time for this technology to develop. I think, though, just to get into another side of this conversation, and it's interesting because we've had this debate now for the past few years, and organisations, blindness organisations especially around the world, are deeply concerned about this, and that is electric cars, which we do have today, and of course we're going to see more and more of in the coming years through this decade. And that is the concern around their silence, essentially, the fact they don't make any noise. I guess driverless cars will be the same because they will probably be electric as well. But the fact is that these vehicles don't have any noise, and, well, there are real dangers here.
Yeah, I mean, they're building in noise, and there are going to be regulations, but they will vary from country to country about when they should give when they should make noise. You know, is it below 12 miles an hour only? Because above that, the noise of the tyres on the road will be sufficient to give people warning. It's a tricky one. I mean, in London now, a lot of the black cabs are electric, and it's really disconcerting because this is a, you know, a big exposure for me, that whereas before I'd only, you know, driven in someone's Tesla and various other, you know, hybrid vehicles, which would sometimes be quiet, but sometimes the engine would kick in. But yeah, so I've been in lots of these London cabs, and they're hugely disconcerting. You're at a taxi rank. There's a lot of other kind of, well, London's a noisy place, so there's a lot of other noise going on. The taxi pulls up in front of you. It was completely silent. And the chap says, "Do you want a taxi, mate?" You know, so that's really,
voice
he's an Australian.
Silence, yeah.
Yeah. And then when you've paid and stuff, you know, you're standing on the curb, and have they gone? Have they not? You put your hand out. Yeah, they're gone. There's no cab there anymore. You know, they're just completely silent, and it is really disconcerting.
That freaked me out because I had gone to a park, actually. We'd taken the dog to a park, and we got the taxi there. It's about maybe 15-minute drive. And we get to the park, and it was an electric car. And I knew it was an electric car. Obviously, the guy was talking about it, and I could tell being in it. It was silent, pretty much. And we get to the park, we get out of the car, and I thought I'd caught my scarf in the car door. So I was just pulling on the scarf, and it obviously came away. It wasn't attached to the door. I was kind of glad afterwards that that was the case, because I turned round to sort of make sure I closed the door properly, and the car was gone. And it was just weird, the fact that I had no idea this thing was even moving. It's incredible.
No, actually, yeah, it's interesting. I've actually got a friend of mine who I actually am quite good friends with, and I actually work with, and he's actually got a Tesla. And actually, he says from the other point of view that he's actually finding it quite frightening that he has to watch out for everybody else because people don't hear his car. So when he's starting, when he backs out of a driveway, and sorry, backs out of a car spot in a car park, nobody's looking at his car because they can't hear the engine. They're not watching the car, and all that sort of stuff. Even when he's on the road and driving, nobody's actually paying attention to him. So he said one of the things that he had to learn very quickly was that he had to watch everybody else because his car was making a noise.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? And you know, that's even affecting other drivers as well. It's not just a blind thing. But of course, for us, and we've had this for years, we've had this with cyclists. You know, at times I've lost a good cane when a cyclist has ploughed through it. And unfortunately, one occasion, a cyclist did come off his bike, which is not great either, when someone, you know, does that. But of course, you know, what can I do? But it's not my fault. But it's just the reality of it. Now, a cycle is one thing. A car is obviously quite another. And if I'd walked out in front of a vehicle because I didn't know it was there, that's not great. I'm just hoping that that car is either going to have that capability where it can stop itself, or, you know, the driver's on his or her game. It's a difficulty, but obviously, like you say, Robin, that there is legislation coming that will give some noise. I still say, I've said this before, but I think it would be great if you get these cars to, even though it might be like a really tiny bubble car thing with two seats in it or whatever, but it sounds like a 747 coming down the street. I quite like the sound of that. Yeah, exactly.
Knight Rider.
Exactly.
Knight Rider. I think, so I have a really nice pair of Bose AR frames, and they shoot a cone of sound into your ears from the arms of the glasses. Yeah, and perhaps these cars of the future could do that. So they aren't going to pollute everywhere with the noise as they're coming down the street, but they could directionally aim a cone of sound, because these AI, you know, the AI within the driverless vehicles will absolutely know. They'll have drawn a rectangle around everything that they need to take care of in their kind of computer brain model of what they're passing by. And so they will be able to potentially fire sound at the people that need to hear it and, you know, avoid noise pollution more generally. Who knows, maybe.
That's like some sort of irate, that's some sort of irate robot. Hey, you! Yeah. Blind person, get over here.
Just going by, just going, car, car, car. But of course, let's not forget, and we were talking about driverless cars at the start, but, you know, driverless vehicles, autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles, all of that, are not just going to be used to ferry us about. Oh no, we're probably in the next couple of years, and a lot of this is down to licensing and legislation, but we're probably going to start seeing the rise of delivery robots, delivery drones as well, flying around. You know, you buy a new washing machine and, you know, a drone just sort of drops it onto your house through your roof, I guess. It's straight in, bang, there you go. But yeah, this is coming as well in this decade. And I think by the end of this decade, that will probably be a very normal way of receiving deliveries.
I've got a feeling that one of us has a Roomba or some sort of robot vacuum cleaner. So I think robots are going to play a large part in, you know, in industry, in retail, but also in the home. And, you know, that drone who delivers your washing machine, who knows, they might drop a little service robot underneath it, and that service robot would trundle it into your house and install the thing for you as well.
Mm.
So, David, you've got a Roomba or something, haven't you?
I do. Yeah. I've got a Samsung. Right? I've got a Samsung. Yeah, I do. Actually, it's interesting. The only thing that concerns me about both the driverless cars, the automated systems, the drones, and that's the prevalence that seems to be coming in more and more, is touch screens. Because, you know, what happens if the drone appears and it goes, well, okay, so for you to confirm your identity, you've got to enter a PIN number on my little touch screen on the side of me. Or if you get into an automated system, it says, please insert on the touch screen your destination. You know, because to me, when you see these lovely buildings that are completely accessible and that sort of stuff, they've got these wonderful elevators that you've got to use a touchscreen to enter in the destination, like floor 11. And then it comes up and says, okay, so your lift is in floor 11 and it's car 5. And it's like, well, number one, I can't read the screen to know it's car, you know, it's floor 11, car 5. And then where the hell is car 5 to begin with in this big, huge lobby area?
Why am I in a car? I should be in a lift. Yeah.
Yeah, let's not go there. I mean, I think
that's a whole other world though, isn't it? I mean, that's new. I mean, I've never heard of that, David. That's a new one to me.
I've seen that.
Have you?
In lots of buildings. Absolutely. You know, it tells you which lift to go to out of the rank of eight that are there, because they do. Wow. They have algorithms that not just see which one's free, they see however, you know, they do lots of calculations to know which one is going to be best utilized at any one time. So, yeah. But going back to the touchscreen thing, this is something we put a flag in last week. Mm. Yes, you could make everything talk. You could make everything have multiple input and output methods, because it's not just, you know, people with a vision impairment, it's people with dexterity difficulties, all that sort of thing. Arguably, though, I like the approach that we're seeing in recent years about where a simple extra little system on a chip that's going to cost, you know, cents rather than many, many pounds or dollars or whatever, would make a white good, white appliance connected, smart. And then you could use whichever device, whether it's an app on your phone, whether it's the Echo, whatever it might be. And obviously then you can do it from halfway across the world as well, because, you know, you've got that remote access to let the chap in, you know, to unlock your front door, to put your Amazon package in the porch or whatever it might be, or to accept the drone delivery. And you've already sorted out your access requirements on that second device. So for me personally, yes, we've seen the rise of touchscreens, and it's problematic when the interface with your preferred IO method isn't there. So if the drone didn't have it, if the microwave didn't have it, if the lift didn't have it, and it's much more likely to be the lifts, the disabled toilets of these world, whether it's in a building or in a train where, you know, it just lights up to say it's locked, that scares the life out of me. If those aren't connected to the devices that we need to use as the interface, then that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good idea, because I know at our major social services thing, Centrelink in Australia, you walk in there up to a touch screen and you get allocated a number. So how do I know what number it is? Or you go to the airport and somebody goes, okay, let's go and do fast check-in. So they go and do a fast check-in via a touch screen, which again is not accessible. I go to the RTA to redo, the Road Traffic Authority here in Australia to redo my disability parking permit. That's not accessible. So I think you're right. I mean, having some sort of chip that would say, okay, fine, you can't use this device, or no, you've got this chip, so therefore I'm going to do this via your Aid Lady or your Google Home or your smartphone. I think that'd be brilliant, because I remember about 25 years ago, IBM had this concept back then where you could insert a chip into any PC and that would automatically know your profile and bring up the appropriate interface for that laptop or the desktop computer that would utilize your special features like large print and speech. So I just think that sort of chip would be an absolutely brilliant idea.
I know you brought up the touchscreen issue on last week's show, and I wanted to say at that time that I think that I agree with you that the touchscreens are obviously a massive challenge, but, I'm talking here about things like white goods especially. If you can get, and I look for this when I'm buying things, the Amazon Echo capability, you know, works with Lady A. If I ever hear that when I'm ordering something, I think that's for me, because I know then it's going to work for me, and in a really positive way, I'll be able to control this device. My heating, my central heating, is probably the most recent device I've put in that has got such massive impact in my home environment, because I'm able to completely control that device without seeing any thermostats, without worrying about, you know, pressing any buttons that I don't know what I'm pressing, all of that. You'll be the same with air conditioning and all the rest. I mean, all of that can be a challenge to use because there's so many buttons on it, whereas you can just say, look, set the temperature to this and set the fan speed or whatever, that's brilliant. And I think that's where, like you're saying as well, Robin, having multiple inputs and outputs options is really going to be where I think we get to. I'm not as worried. I mean, I am obviously concerned when, you know, accessibility doesn't seem to be there, like you're saying, David, on these in these lifts you get into, there isn't that alternative option. But I think with location-aware technology through your phone, I mean, the iPhone 11, for example, that came out, had that built in. I don't think it's activated yet, or if it is activated, it's not being used.
NFC,
for very few
things. So, very few things.
So you in theory can point your phone at something and it will know what it's aware. You know, if I had another iPhone I was trying to AirDrop with, instead of it just giving me every single iPhone in this you know around me, it will tell me the one that's closest to me because it knows it's location aware. And we're moving towards, I think, a lot more of that, where the phone is more capable. And again, that's a mainstream thing, but that will have a massive impact on us, won't it?
So iBeacons is something that, or beacons in general, have been around for a long time, and they have much more scope to, because NFC is within very close, you know, so you're not accidentally going to pay for somebody else's shopping because you're within a meter of the checkout thing. You have to actually tap it on it. But with iBeacons, you can set them to have a sensitivity where, it, you know, you're within a meter, 3 meters, 5 meters of a lift, for example, and it will activate it. I'm hoping that there will be standardization. In recent weeks, sort of 3 weeks ago, Amazon, Google, and Zigbee are one of the standards for connectivity. Connected homes, IoT, Internet of Things, all of the devices that are online in your house, how they talk to each other. And the problem was that they all had different ways of talking to each other. So if we can get standardization, if organizations can come together and agree on the protocols of these devices talking to each other, then we can get a very cheap, very standard system on a chip that could go into all of these devices, that could go into the panel on a lift, for example, and could even have, because they've got power, they could even have an iBeacon in there as well. And if you've got several panels of several lifts, then the iBeacons can triangulate exactly where you are. So it's not only a proximity thing, it will actually pinpoint where you are. And because it's a standard, you could then have that built into the OS of the phone, so you don't have to have a particular app installed. And the OS can pipe up saying, okay, this is where you are. You have to turn 30 degrees to your left and walk forward 4 paces, and that's your lift. So 10 years, maybe, but, you know, we've got the technology Lego bricks today. Let's just put them together.
Well, I mean, a good example of that was I was in Canada last year, and I wanted to know how to get from I was at a bus stop. I'd got off a bus and I was told, just go to the subway station. Well, where is the subway station? And I'd used Lazarillo to find the subway station. And it basically said, you know, walk straight for half or whatever and you'll find the subway entrance. And it was there, and that was it. And I found it. And I thought, that is incredible, just that alone. And, you know, of course, we all talk about the last 10 yards problem, where we can find a building, but it will never take us to the door. And that is where these beacons come in, I guess, because unless we get to a point where GPS, and it may never get to the stage where it can be that accurate, that it will take you to the front door of a building. But, you know, that's where beacons can sort of almost hand off and take over. And, you know, that could be, I mean, you know, to widen that out, that could be amazing for just going to the shopping mall. You know, you go to the shopping centre and you want to know what shops are around you. I mean, it's a simple thing. But, you know, to use beacons for that purpose alone, and not only that, it might tell you what offers are on or, you know, what the shop is. It's not very well to giving you a name, but what is the store? I went
That's
into a store
why
once.
Beacons, yeah,
I went into,
were
I went
invented
into a store
in the
once
first place.
Called Office, and it was a store called Office, and I went in and asked for a ream of paper. This was a good few years back, and I was told, we only sell shoes in here. Right, okay.
Office shoes,
yeah. Because I don't want shoes, I want paper. So, you know, it's important we get that context as well. And, you know, this of course could apply to going to museums, it could apply to going to art galleries. A lot of places I just don't, personally, I don't go, because unless there's someone with me, my wife and I are both blind, so the idea of us going there together, it just seems so much of a headache going there, because you know you're not going to get as much out of it as other people will. And, you know, and the only time you'll maybe get that is if you get an audio commentary. But still, you're only getting audio, which is essentially a companion to the visual you're getting. It's not a description of what you're seeing. So you're kind of, the whole thing's been built in your head and you're not getting the best images with it. That's the problem. So this kind of technology could really make a difference. And it'd be great for mainstreaming. And of course, think about the capability of different languages, you know, so language barriers are broken with all of that. Doesn't matter where you're from, because the information is available to you in the language you speak. And the I actually think one of the big benefits for this decade, especially around language, is going to be that that we don't have to necessarily learn new languages. We can enjoy the language we speak, and we can embrace other languages because we'll be able to talk to each other real time with conversion, you know, with conversion of language from Chinese to English or whatever. So, you know, massively, massively impressive stuff.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing that already, that, you know, instant translation on the fly, because up till now, you've had to wait until somebody is good and ready to finish their sentence before it even begins the translation. But real-time translation, keeping up with the person speaking, is a reality today. Mm. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that that's going to progress apace, even in the, you know, months and years to come, in the early part of the decade.
And not only that, you know, I mean, the idea of... and I always find it difficult saying this because, you know, it almost feels in some ways like I'm picking on a particular group. But I always find it very difficult when a deaf person comes into the room, because I can't communicate with them. If someone's profoundly deaf and they require signing, if they can lip read me and I can, you know, and they're able to speak back, it's okay. But it's often very difficult if someone can't speak clearly because they are profoundly deaf and they've perhaps been that way since birth. But this technology, again, could enable, and it's starting to get there, where, you know, signing is being essentially translated into words, and what I say can be signed back, or if the person can read lips, then that's great. But the point is that a conversation can then begin between two groups. And growing up as a child among a lot of disabled people, as I was often put in groups of people who had varying disabilities. And, you know, it was always the deaf people who just never mingled with anybody because nobody else knew what to say or how to communicate. And, you know, I could learn British slang language tomorrow, but, you know, I could learn how to speak to someone, but I'd never be able to see their response. So that's a massive challenge there. And that, again, technology can break all that away and actually start a conversation with people who, I work with people in a building right now who I can't communicate with. Imagine me being able just to walk up and talk to them. I'd love that.
It's not because they're avoiding you. I mean,
yeah, they just don't like me. Yeah, yeah, they know me well.
Quiet in
yeah.
the office today.
Yeah.
I want to talk about AI and how readily or how quickly it might replace humans. So I touched upon
we're all
the Bose frames, which I'm really liking my Bose frames. Obviously, they don't have a camera built in. And we've talked on many times on Tech Talk about how soon we will get something that will be always looking where we're looking. So obviously like a head mounted thing, it will be socially acceptable to have that camera working for us. And it will give us a lot of really useful information. And I think that a lot of what we've talked about already today would benefit from that, whether it's recognizing that there's a silent car coming along, so don't step out off the pavement, whether it's finding the right lift, whether it's finding the door to a building, you know, whatever it might be, whether it's instructing you about exactly the point where you touch on a touchscreen on a drone that's just delivering your Amazon goods, whatever it might be. At the moment, that would need a human to do that. Aira, Be My Eyes, etc. And that's been a really powerful recent addition to our sort of tech toolkit, this remote pair of eyes available at all times. And I think 5G is going to really help that going forward.
I agree.
But what do you guys think about when AI will be able to give us that kind of information instantly? You know, we've got instant translation of people's language now. You know, how far ahead will it be that, you know, the AI that's being driven, excuse the pun, by the development of driverless cars, etc., you know, to be really much better than it is today? When will we see that benefit?
I think it's going to be massive because there's lots of things that I'd love to an AI to do for me. Like, for example, you know, if I'm, you know, I'm doing the gardening and that sort of stuff and I put the rake down somewhere, it's like, well, how come I just can't ask whoever it might be, you know, where did I put the rake? Or, you know, my wife says to me, can you just pop back to the car and grab the trolley, blah, blah, blah. And I go, well, I don't know where you park the car in the car park. I know what level we're on, but I don't know where it is. So there's lots of different situations where I can imagine artificial intelligence just popping in and going, well, okay, so you want to find your car again. I've got a note here that says you parked on level 2, so let's go into the left, go to level 2. I'm pretty sure it's on the second aisle over from the left, so let's turn right out of the lift. Let's go forward, and I will let you know when I see your red Subaru Forester with the number plate, blah, blah, blah. So I really think artificial intelligence can do a lot. I mean, even just traveling around a street, you know, I've noticed there's a barrier in front of you. You can go left to go around it, or there's a huge freaking hole. You're going to fall if you keep going straight ahead. Let's go backwards. In a building, you know, I can see that the receptionist is at the desk. If you walk forward, you know, 5 meters, you'll arrive at the reception desk. I know where the lifts are. There's just lots and lots of object-oriented things, let alone just communication, that I think would be just absolutely amazing, that if you just had this little AI, you know, in your smartphone or in some glasses, or God forbid, a chip in your brain, or that actually transmitted into your brain, that you could actually have this instant, basically friend, or whatever you want to call it, just talking you through the whole day.
We've kind of, I think we're not far off that. I mean, I think ultimately this decade is about, I think, a culmination of technologies. And I think 5G will be the sticky tape that puts it all together. I'm sure there's a nicer way of saying that. But it is, you know, it's going to be the one thing that kind of pulls it all together, that makes it all work. You know, driverless car technology we talked about, AI, beacons, all of that working together is going to create that world you want, Robin. Because that's going to be the technology that allows all this to happen with, you know, significantly less latency. That delay that exists at the moment that you want to, you know, really hammer down on to make all this work. I heard a lot in the last 5 years about smart cities. And as much as I keep hearing about smart cities, I never really knew what it meant. It was often the example given was, you know, a car drives into a city, someone's in the car, they're driving the car, looking for a parking space. You know, we can have sensors underneath, you know, car parking spaces that will tell you when the space is free, and then, you know, it'll flash up on your sat nav. Do you want a car parking space? Yes, you know, and it'll direct you to one, providing someone doesn't obviously jump in at first, which would obviously knacker the whole thing. But, you know, the point is that was the kind of level. I think it's much more than that now. And 5G and imagination with it will enable all of this. And if you put all of this together, you know, the idea of the smart rake, and, you know, although actually I would say the quick solution to that, David, is stick a tile on it. And then
I thought you were going to say walk around and wait till it smacks you in the face.
Yeah, well, there's that as well. That's the less smart option. But the smart option is stick a tile on it and then just ask Lady A where it is and she'll tell you. But, you know, it's that kind of thing, you know. And this is what I mean about it kind of almost being here, but it's all patchy. It's all in bits. And once it's all put together, you know, the idea of cars. So I think about the example you used there, Robin, of crossing a road and knowing the car's coming. That car is connected on 5G to the grid because it's a driverless car. So it's connected to the world. The world knows where that car is, and the technology knows where you are. And when you cross out in front of it, your sound in your ears will tell you there's a vehicle there because it's connected to the network you're on. So, you know, absolutely. In some respects, it's actually really simple, but it just takes all this to come together. We're talking 10 years. I mean, I think by 2030, this might be a reality in cities, and I hope it certainly is. But I think it takes a lot because, of course, there are so many companies, so many factors involved in making all of that happen. But I agree, it would be an amazing world.
I mean, if you think purely from a technology point of view, then you're absolutely right. There are lots of solutions that you could have to, for example, that problem of the car coming towards you. The grid, the internet would know where that car is. Similarly, it could be transmitting a signal that was of a standard that other things would be able to pick up. You know, so iOS, for example, would know that there's a beacon coming in the shape of a car, and your Bose frames with your 3D audio could be creating the car noise in coming from the right direction because it's got 3D awareness, it's got a compass in the glasses, so the car itself wouldn't have to make the noise. The problem is, for people that haven't got that technology, you know, for an older person who's deaf, but they wouldn't hear the car coming anyway, or who's blind, you know, so there needs to be fallback solutions for people that aren't as kind of tech equipped.
But then that could be the technology is the deaf example, though. Someone who's deaf might have a vibrating headband or something that vibrates in 3D. So you would
if
know
they have one. But what about the people that don't? That's well, the see, problem.
But you know, so, yeah. I really get annoyed by this. I get annoyed by a lot of things. But you know, I get annoyed by this argument of, but what about people who don't have the technology? If you're talking about cost, that's one thing. But if it's because people haven't bothered to get involved in it, then that's a different issue. You know, people who say to me, "Well, I don't wish that on anyone." But people who've said to me in the past, "Oh, I don't use a smartphone. I don't want to use one," but then complain because nothing else is accessible to them. But you know, if you used a smartphone, it would be. But I don't want to use a smartphone. Well, that's on you. That is on you. You've got to make a decision. And I think if I used the example once to somebody who did say this to me. And oh, I don't want to bother with that. And I said, okay, well, let's you know, you're a blind person. Let's say you didn't have a guide dog or a white cane, and you're walking around the streets and you're constantly bumping into things and falling over people and wondering what's going on. At some point, you'd have to say to yourself, or someone would say to you, you need some kind of mobility aid here. You need to take responsibility for your own mobility and orientation. So you've got to have a white cane or a guide dog because it's just not safe being out the way you are. We've got to take responsibility. So, you know, that argument I tend to push back on. Cost is a different thing. And I think that charities and organisations, and I know there's a lot going on, that could make this technology more affordable and more available to people. Not necessarily for free for everybody. I don't think blind people should get everything for free. But I think if you have, you know, not got the money, if you are not of means to do it or get access to that tech, you should get access to it for free. We live in the UK, pretty much a welfare state. We should provide this technology to people who need it for free, because that technology it is an essential now. It's not a nice to have. It is an essential. So, you know, but if you just can't be bothered using it, well, it's on you.
I agree that we should be proactive in engaging with technology and getting life skills like Braille, etc. Otherwise, you know, we can't expect everything to come to us.
No.
But the one reason why I'm, for example, quite sanguine about the fact that the driverless car experience is going to be an inclusive one is because you can't assume that people are going to be up on the tech or that they're going to be paying attention. So, for example, blind people and deaf people could all have the right tech to help them not get run over when they cross the road when there's an electric car coming. But the electric car industry can't rely on everyone either being teched up or even paying attention when they're crossing the road. So there has to be another solution that hopefully will stop, you know, numerous fatalities of people walking out distracted by their smartphone.
That's not on blind people though either. I mean, that's not just blind people. Yeah. It could be anybody. What if you're drunk and you walk in front of one of these cars?
Exactly, which is why I think that driverless vehicles, you know, hailing one, getting in one, you know, making sure that the person, there can't be any responsibility on the driver or the person standing on the curb to do things and know about things, because I think that's an unrealistic expectation. It could be a six-year-old child.
Yeah.
It could be someone with dementia that the parent, the child needs to send to the home 300 miles away or something. And so you've got someone in the car who has no responsibility for themselves, but still needs to be safely delivered.
Absolutely. So, there are yeah. a million questions yeah. that need to be answered. And there's no one size fits all on this. But I think on the key point about blind people and technology, I think I still stand by the fact it is on us to take responsibility. You know, of course, there are different aspects to that, and like I say, cost is one variant on that can really impact the availability of that technology. I understand that, but if you're someone of means and you just can't be bothered, then it's on you. That's what I'm saying. Let's talk about some other stuff, because we talked last week about audio description, and there was a question that David posed. You know, essentially his family are sick of him listening to audio description because they're sick of knowing what's going to happen before it happens on screen. And, you know, he'd like a solution to that. So, Robin, you and I both spent some time at TechShare Pro, of course, in 2019, and we got some answers to that question, didn't we?
Yeah, so one of the sessions was about next generation audio. And this ties in with accessibility, which I'll I'll explain in a moment. But basically, they use as an example TV, but it could be any kind of surround sound audio experience. And they were saying that at the moment, you know, you can have speakers behind you, you can have a bass woofer and that sort of thing. And there can be some separation in the way that the sound has been recorded, processed and delivered. So you can have different channels that go through different speakers, etc. But there's no control really, apart from turning the bass up and down, that sort of thing. Whereas with next generation audio, they're hoping that all the technology, whether it's the TV, the set-top box, the built-in speakers or the external speakers, will all support this next generation audio, which gives you this object-oriented media, as it's called. Basically, every bit of sound that is delivered through that program or that movie has its own tag. And that tag is in a separate, it's a separate element, a separate data object. And they can be manipulated independently by your system preferences. So if you don't want to have any of the, you know, background cafe noise because it makes it difficult to hear the thing, then you could take that right down. So the dialogue of the actors would be on a separate channel. And not only that, but they would be where they're coming from in the kind of 3D sound space, whether it's through the speakers either side of the TV or whether they're coming from behind you because, you know, they're that's what they are doing in the particular, you know, something's coming up from behind the person, the point of view of the TV. All of that can be altered as well. So if you want, you could up the volume level of one of the characters, or you could change the language of one of the characters on the fly to a different language altogether, because maybe that was a Spanish speaking character and you wanted him to actually talk in a robotic voice in English. Or if you've got audio description, for example, you can change the relative volume of the audio description. You can change where it comes from. I only want it to come in my left ear. I want it to sound like it's coming from behind over my left shoulder, whatever you want. And if you're listening on a connected set of headphones, for example, Bluetooth, I just want it to be fed through the Bluetooth headset. Everyone in the room can get whatever they want. And you can change the mix for the person just listening through those headphones, say. So it basically separates out all of the audio into different elements, of which you can do what you will.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. I mean, to me, the only issue with audio description at the moment is that, and I think we mentioned on this last week's show, that the cable networks at the moment, I know they've got an accessible box in the United States, I believe, but, you know, in Australia at least, and I think the UK, the fact that you still can't access your, you know, your direct cable TV box directly, and they don't still support audio description. So I always think audio description, I always think about being on, you know, on your mobile device or whatever else, but I just wish the huge hole is filled up by the end of 2030, that, you know, most devices that you use, including your set-top box to access your cable TV, or who knows, maybe even cable TVs might just go away in the box, and we just do everything online these days.
More than likely. I think that's probably by the end of 2030. I know that in the UK, Sky, which is a major satellite broadcaster, I think the plan is for them to, not so much by the end of the decade, but certainly in the next few years, begin moving away from satellite broadcast because it's a very expensive business. And with the rise of 5G and better internet access, especially across the UK, and the ability to stream everything, essentially on internet-based platforms, which seems to be the way it goes. But that is what actually opens up all of the capability that Robin's talking about, because internet gives you more options than typical broadcast. You know, you can broadcast so many ways. There's only so much bandwidth, whereas internet gives you so much more at a lesser cost. So in some respects, you actually get much more for your money as a broadcaster, which, of course, then in turn works for us. And this isn't, I mean, we heard about this from the perspective of sport, you know, the idea of watching a football match, and, you know, you can place yourself in the environment wherever you want to be. So if you want to be at the left side of the stadium or the right hand side of the stadium or behind the goals or whatever, and then you can have the audio come from whatever direction you want and whatever style, you know, that kind of customization is there. And that seems to be the theme going into 2020, is personalization, whether it be driverless cars that, you know, enable you to travel independently on your own, using your device with your style of, you know, maybe you like a certain Spotify playlist that when you get in the car you can listen to, or you know, you like all the lights to be blue, or whatever it is you like, you can have. And customization seems to be, and personalization seems to be the way things are going. Now, we start off, and we talked a lot this hour about some of the big, big things that are coming over the next decade for sure. But back to today in 2020 and what's already here and what we already like. And when we think about the Amazon Echo, which I think was the big breakthrough device of the last decade for sure for me, it was just a device which changed my whole approach. At first I thought, this seems like a nice idea, but it's probably a bit of a gimmick, to realizing how much of a difference it has made in my life as a blind person. And then I think about what's coming next and what we're seeing, and David brought this up last week and I want to finish on this point, is screens being introduced into these devices. We see it with the Echo Show, which has got a screen accompaniment to the audio. We see it with Google and the Google Nest products now bringing screens into those as well. Artificial intelligence, these devices which were audio-based for a long time, now have screens. What is the impact, David? What is your view on this?
This is what I'm very worried about, because I know to some extent it happens sometimes on my iPhone or the actual Android stuff where it says, you know, for more information, please look at the screen, or I found this on the web for you, look at the screen, or even worse, I found out your destination. I've actually got a blue tick on it on the screen. That's where you need to go. So what I'm worried about is that we'll get sort of, I guess, the screen will start impacting upon how you access the information. So rather than just saying, well, here's your route and we're going to talk you through it, it's going to say, please follow the blue line, or, you know, here's a picture of the building that you want to get to. So it's going to end up being very visual yet again, rather than just audio or textual information on the screen. So, you know, I just hope we don't lose it. I mean, I know Amazon in the US has got that absolutely brilliant thing now with the fact that you can hold up an object in front of the camera and it should tell you what it
is.
That's brilliant. But I just don't want the system to start saying, here's your information, please look at the screen. I mean, that's just going to be absolutely appalling.
I'm really optimistic about it, because you're right, the S lady on iPhones has always been held back by the fact that there was a screen. She relied on it too much. She was lazy about just throwing it out to a web search. So they didn't develop the smarts in it quickly enough, because they could fall back on the easy option. Whereas the Echo always started off from with not having a screen. And the vast majority of Echoes out there still don't have screens. And as a result, they couldn't be lazy like that. So they really upped the game when it comes to smart assistants. And I would argue that they're the best. I haven't got a Google Home. I know they're pretty good too. But as far as the third-party skills and the add-on capabilities, the Echo knocks them out of the park. So yes, there are ones with screens. Will they become the majority, and hence, you know, things will start to creep in where, oh, that functionality, that core functionality of the Echo only works on those screen models? I don't think that's going to be the case, because the utility of just talking to the air is just so powerful. And they've brought out a whole range of devices. They also have some smart glasses with a lady built in that don't have a screen of any kind. They've even got it in a Ring, for goodness sake. So I think they're leaning into all devices. They're not, you know, the evidence isn't that they're kind of moving towards making you have to have one with some sort of screen associated with it. So, I mean, that might not prove to be true over the next 10 years, but I'm really optimistic that ambient computing, where you just talk to the air and something really smart happens without you having to look anywhere, without you having to stop to focus on something visual if you're walking down the street, I'm really encouraged that that's not going to happen. And so at the heart of a smart assistant is this kind of you talk to it, it talks to you experience.
I'm not going to repeat what David said, I will just echo it. See what I did there? I'll echo it. I totally agree with you, David. I am concerned about it. But I'm not going to say it again, because you've said it all beautifully and I would just be repeating everything you just said. We're out of time again. Can you believe it? David, I know you do the Talking Tech podcast and radio show mm-hmm. on Vision Australia. If people aren't listening to it, they really need to, because it's a brilliant 15-minute show. It's only 15 minutes, and I kind of love it for that, because it's just a nice digest of what's going on. How can people listen to it?
They can just basically go on the internet on your smart device of whatever you want to be using and just search for Vision Australia Radio or Talking Tech from Vision Australia Radio, or you can just follow the podcast Talking Tech from Vision Australia. So that's the other stuff. So my other podcast, of course, which is I See Various Technologies from a Blind Person's Perspective, that's also available as well. So they're my two main sources. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, which is at D Woodbridge, and that's where I basically say what I'm doing, what I'm currently playing with, if I'm trying to get a concrete gnome in my backyard, for example, all that sort of cool stuff besides technology, then you can follow me on Twitter as well.
Brilliant. And don't forget Robin's Dot to Dot podcast, a brilliant resource as well if you use the Echo Dot or any Echo device for that matter. You can find out about all of the different skills. How many episodes are you up to now, Robin?
1,050.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. It's utter nonsense. It really is. Too many.
I just want to echo what David said. IC is one word, I-S-E-E. Just search for that in your podcatcher and you'll subscribe to a brilliant... if you like gadget demos, you have to subscribe.
Oh, you've got to. I mean, you know, I'm not blowing smoke here, but honestly, Dave, you know, you do a fantastic job on that. And it's such a good podcast. It's just it's so nice to get that. You are very objective. You're not like me, which is great. Listen, thank you so much for coming on to the show and spending some time with us over the past couple of weeks, David. Really appreciate it. And we will catch up with you soon.
Exactly. No problem at all. Thanks for having me on again.
And Robin, we will be back at the same time next week.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, David.
We will be checking out your emails. Lots of those to come. Andy will be back with us next week to go through the emails. We gave him a couple of weeks off. We thought we'd be nice. So he will be back with us next week to go through your emails. And don't forget to keep your emails coming in. If you've got any views on the last couple of weeks, I'm sure you do. Email them in and we'll get them read out next week on our show. The email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can shout at me if you want on Twitter at Tech Talker Steve. That's where you'll find me. And I'll catch you again next time for another Tech Talk right here on RNIB Connect Radio and also on the podcast as well. As always, Tuesdays from 1 on air and online. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you next time.